Welcome back to 50 States of Mind. A lot has changed in the world since our last episode. Things have gotten even more dire within our democracy. So, it seemed like a great opportunity to dive back in, have difficult conversations, re-examine our preconceived notions, and be self-critical to try to understand what is really going on the ground through stories from all 50 states. I'm Ryan Bernstein, and welcome back to 50 States of Mind. Welcome back to 50 States of Mind. This is a really wild episode because we're going out west, and we have the perfect person from the east to take us out west. So tell me who you are and introduce yourself.
Thank you for the overwhelming introduction. That's no pressure at all, really, to assess the West from the United Kingdom. Hi, everyone. My name is Luke Anthony Neville. I am British. I don't know if you can tell from my weird hybrid accent.
Perfect. And yeah, no pressure to assess the entire West, but we did meet out West.
We did meet out West. Brian and I met because we have a similar love and passion for a very niche book and film series. We did the Harry Potter Tournament of Houses, which was like a nerd flex, I guess, TV show. I mean, I guess the theater community is a fandom, I guess, of theater, but like my Harry Potter love didn't run as deep as many of our co-workers on this wonderful project, but it sort of unclogged this madness, and now my husband's like, when will this end? Like, no, we're not getting a Harry Potter paraphernalia bookshelf. Like, that was never part of the decor of our house. Why are you talking like this? You just need to stop watching the films. It's gone like the other way, you know what I mean?
How did you wind your way from, you know, having a British accent to having a quasi-British accent? Like, what was your journey leaving, I assume, home and coming to America?
So I was born in England, raised in England, and then for college had decided through a mutual friend of mine who had gone to drama school in America that I would perhaps pursue the same path. I'd always kind of had a weird desire / connection to New York City, I think, just because it was so polar opposite from where I grew up. For context, I grew up in County Durham, which is in the northeast region of England. If you've ever seen Billy Elliot, the musical and or film, you're in the right place. That's like sort of where I grew up. So I think there was like a sort of fascination with how different the scale of New York City and the lifestyle of New York City was in comparison to, and maybe even more so than London. I feel like London was very much a part of my teenage years. You know, I'd go down with friends and would see theater. And I think the sort of chase of New York being a little bit more like further afield and like a little bit harder to grasp for someone that was from where I was. I studied there for 3 years and met my husband, which meant that we sort of settled down here while we both graduated and sort of went through our careers post-graduation. So that's sort of how I ended up still here.
Paint a picture for me of County Durham.
It all comes full circle, actually. I mean, if you have an image of Hogwarts and its surrounding area, it's not too far afield. I mean, it's a cathedral city, so we have Durham Cathedral, which is sort of like right in the middle of the county. Huge university life. We also have a University of Tokyo in County Durham, so like a huge net of intake of students. And I think Durham University sort of ranks up in, I want to say, the top six in the UK. So there's like a really great sort of wide net thrown, I want to say. Surrounding this county is small mining villages, so huge coal mining region, much similar to Scotland, sort of very anti-Maggie Thatcher region. But yeah, so it's a lot of small towns surrounding sort of like an epicenter of like this beautiful cathedral city that I sort of spent my days being a truant in. That's a sort of weird segue, but like, for instance, like Hadrian Wall is very close to where we are, and that's where I had like, I think, one of my first drinks and like night out. Like, I don't know if that's what it was built for, but yeah, that's sort of how I lent into the beautiful ancient surroundings of my growing up.
Big seminal life moments. on historical grounds. It's kind of, you had like double the significance. So you're talking about coal mining, like people hate Maggie Thatcher. We're talking Billy Elliot. Does that still have impact on the community?
For sure. I think there's a pride that comes with the Northeast, and there's a very earnest quality I find to the Northeast of England in everyone that I sort of grew up around. What was interesting from my perspective was that my family wasn't actually from the region. We moved there when I was 4, I think. But my parents are both from the south coast of England, which is a very different region. A lot of shipyards, a lot of navy, a lot of a different industry almost. So when they moved to the Northeast in the early 90s, that was sort of the end of what had been a large period of time that was very much recovering from the closing of the mines, which was, you know, Margaret Thatcher. And it's definitely felt, there's a pride in the mines and the mining culture. We have a gathering once a year in the Northeast in County Durham, the place where I'm from, called the Miners Gala. And basically each village will put forward their local like brass band and group of people that are part of the Miners Association still. And they'll march through the town center with their banners and sort of celebrate the history. So it was really interesting growing up around that, having sort of this weird, somewhat outside perspective. I mean, like, you know, 4 years in the South Coast is not in any way conscious to have like perspective, but it was really interesting. My family being Southerners, sort of growing up in this environment. I really, really loved growing up in the Northeast. Very sort of proud of where I'm from.
Kind of a perfect segue into the state we're going to be talking about today. So you've waited and you've wondered, and now I'm going to ask you, Luke, what do you know about the state of Wyoming?
I feel like it's the state that is like, I don't think I've said the word Wyoming a lot in my life. Like, I feel like I haven't articulated that word. When I think of Wyoming, I, of course, think of Yellowstone. I think of Brokeback Mountain. One of the least populated states, right? Is it Alaska? Mm-hmm. No. Is it Wyoming?
I think Wyoming, yeah.
I knew that it was sort of down there. Weirdly associated with Wyoming, I did know that Jackson Pollock was from there. I did fine art for a little while back in the UK and loved Jackson Pollock. I think I thought I was getting a sort of free pass of like, well, this is going to be an easy year. And then realizing there was more to expressionism than just yeeting paint at a canvas, which is the official art critical term. And that's sort of it, really. Like, I associate sort of, I'd say probably Brokeback Mountain, even though it was filmed in Canada, I know that it was set in Wyoming. So I imagine like rolling hills and tent life and herding cattle and, you know, yeah.
As a theater person, do you know much about Laramie Project?
Yes,
or
yes. My queerness and being in theater, the Laramie Project, and as well as obviously the tragic murder of Matthew Shepard. And I definitely feel that's like woven into being queer as someone. It's just something that we knew, I think, moving to America for sure. It was something that I was always aware of, especially during like the Obama administration and things like that.
Yeah, because whenever I thought of Wyoming, I just went straight to Laramie Project. Matthew Shepard, that was pretty much all I know. There's Brokeback Mountain and there's Laramie Project. As far as stories from Wyoming, those are kind of the big ones.
But yeah, I associate that sort of like cowboy-esque more around livestock than, you know, sort of gun shooting, swinging saloon doors kind of cowboys. I imagine it with like more mountains.
That's exactly the right vibe. I mean, and in Wyoming, more cows than people. Want to kick off with this first interview, which was with Amber, who opened up a distillery called Backwards Distillery in Casper, Wyoming, with her wife. And talked a little bit about the impact of coming home to where she was raised and the effect that as a business owner in town she could have on Casper. So let's give that one a listen.
It's really exciting to be in Casper now after, you know, years growing up here. It was fine. Moving back here, it was fine. But after starting the business kind of in these last like 3-4 years, we have a critical mass of cool people that are doing cool things. They've all got their own projects going in their own sort of sectors and wherever their passions lie, but it's to the point where there's enough of that happening that you see like a noticeable change in the town, you know, where it's like just one person doing something cool is not really enough to like move the needle in terms of like the overall vibe of the place. But there are enough people now doing things and pursuing these projects that the town is different now, and it's got a different vibe. It's got a different trajectory to me now, and it's we've seen to me what is a pretty significant transformation in the last couple of years. It's just it's just a cool time to be here because it's like you've got the opportunity to participate in that versus moving into a place that's like ready made. You know, it's all good, like ready to go, or a place that's going nowhere. You know, like we're, it's way more exciting to be in a place where you see potential and you also feel like you can influence that, and the people around you are influencing it too. So it's to me a really exciting time to be here.
And your fears about being a young progressive person coming back to Casper, do you feel like you being a progressive person in Casper has actually made the town better?
Yeah. I mean, I can't take all the credit for that, certainly, but I think that, I think that because, you know, what I was saying before, where you've got distilleries and breweries that have this sort of, like, community, like it's just like a gathering point, people are emotionally attached to it. By extension, people get emotionally attached to the people involved in that, and I think we've worked really hard to be a positive force in the community so that people would attach positive feelings to us and our business. And because of that, to me, I've got sort of a people know who I am. I'm visible because of this business in the community, and I'm involved in the community. I've gotten involved beyond the business as well, and I think that that's what's really important is that I don't necessarily fit the mold, but I've positioned to where I can. People know me. I think they like me. They want me to be involved in these things, and so by like naturally, you know, my more progressive sort of viewpoint comes along with me, and I think that's what you need. Otherwise, you're ending up in this sort of like echo chamber of you know, yeah. And it's just to me, like I wouldn't be in any of these positions if I didn't have the business, because that's really been the launching platform. But it has allowed me to be a young, involved person in the community, and I think that's where the energy comes from, is like a lot of people doing that sort of thing and bringing new energy and bringing new ideas to the table, and then having people in place that are executing them. Like that's the exciting part, is you've got, you know, people that are really doing the things that they're thinking of doing, and it's moving the needle relatively quickly in my opinion to something. I mean, I'm not saying it's like getting more progressive politically necessarily, but certainly you know, the community feel is more, to me, I would feel more comfortable coming here now as myself than I would have 4 years ago.
Yeah, that's a bit of a concern of mine too, because I'm looking for a new place to live. Mm-hmm. I'm in Oxford right now, living mm-hmm. in the UK.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for a place where, like you said, I don't want to go to a ready-made city that's like, yeah. Oh, there you go, enjoy everything. I want to participate.
Yeah.
Politically, from what I understand, Wyoming's a bit of a live-and-let-live state. Like, politics is leave me alone. Do you agree that that's the case?
In a lot of realms, yes, I think that is the case. I mean, the interesting thing in Wyoming is that we're so small that it's basically like you're like friends and neighbors who are like governing. You know, it's not like people who are like lifetime politicians necessarily. I mean, there's certainly some of that, and we're getting more like big money in politics, but compared to other places, not. So it's definitely a lot more sort of. There's a lot more personal relationships that you can develop with your elected representatives, which I think is, you know, puts us in the position where it is sort of like, you know, they're not out to like, they're not like vindictive people, you know, like they know you, like you come up to them and say like, hey, like this is, it's not for their intention to like do like negative things necessarily, but, you know, certainly they do sometimes, and they go in directions that I don't agree with, but a lot of, so I think some of the more extreme ideas tend to die in like our legislature and that sort of thing, just because they're like, nah, like I'm not even getting into this, not my business, like I'm not even gonna entertain this discussion, even if it is like a super conservative, like would be aligned with what you would think of as a super conservative ideal. There's a lot of like more like pragmatism, like I'm not bothering with that. That's not the government's position, so no thank you. You know, some of the more controversial subjects and that sort of thing. And so they do have that, they do have that perspective, and in some, most of the time I think it's good, but sometimes I also think it's not really good enough just to say like, well, I'll just stay out of your business. As long as you're not bothering me, I'm not bothering you. And it's like, well, I mean, that works a lot of times, but also like there are times when you do need to be a little bit more proactive than that to, you know, help certain populations in the community achieve equality, achieve, you know, opportunity and that sort of thing. You can't just be like, well, I mean, I'm gonna just ignore you, essentially. It's like, that's the other like underlying, it's got like a tone of like apathy like woven into it, I think, where it's just like, I mean, it's great if you're, if everything's good for you, then it's cool that you're like live and let live. But if you're needing something, you're needing something to change in order to be able to, you know, live your life here, that's not a great attitude to have.
Yeah. And when you talk about seeing the fruits of people's labors manifesting themselves, what are other people that you know doing to affect the community? You have a distillery / yoga studio / music business.
I mean, it's just, I have so many people in this community are just doing the coolest things. I've got, I mean, closest to home for me, my spouse, who basically, who took Casper Pride and what it was, which was like a 2-hour picnic in the park, and turned it into, with help, it's not just her, but turned it into 4-day extravaganza that was on MTV, like,
really?
A couple years ago. Like, they did a whole documentary on it. Like, it's, like, stuff like that was just like, that never would have happened a few years ago, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we've got the plaza downtown, like, that is the result of a lot of individuals putting in a lot of work to make that dream come true. The David Street Station is,
yeah,
if you've gone
we
past
met
there,
with Charles Walsh today.
Yes. Yeah, so he's one of them, and he kind of was an early originator of that idea, and you know, and now it's there a few years later. I mean, a number of years later, those things take a lot of time, you know, but the Downtown Development Authority, like those individuals running that have pushed that vision forward. We've got, you know, groups, Visit Casper. A lot of these are like our sort of quasi-government organizations. So they've got the right like leadership in place, CEOs and presidents running these organizations that are just driving hard. They've discussed with us the potential of trying to appeal to LGBTQ travelers. Like, I don't think anybody else in Wyoming is trying to do that, right? Like, that's not like it's not a thing. But they, to them, they're like, we want all these people in our community, and we want to make sure our community is a place that we can confidently go out and say, like, your group would be welcome here into our community to experience these things that, like, we have to offer. Great outdoor opportunities, like amazing mountain, like for cross-country skiing, biathlon, gold metal waters running straight through the middle of the town. Like, you don't, for trout fishing, like, it's there's a lot here, and we've got people really championing that. I mean, we've got our arts organizations are super strong, thanks to like leadership in those positions as well. People opening cool businesses, like nonprofit sector. We've got a friend of mine who we partner with a lot, Wyoming Food for Thought Project, who's making sure kids aren't hungry, and they're going into neighborhoods that have potential for food instability and planting free gardens and free pantries that people are giving to. And like, Casper was ranked by some magazine, I'll have to remember the name of it, as the number one most generous, most giving city in the United States. Like,
really?
Yeah, like by per capita nonprofit giving, basically. Is what, you know, why that, where that came from. So we've got this nonprofit sector that is moving needle forward. That same organization is like dealing with the farmers market, and they have built that into something really astonishing. And then they just opening up Food Hub downtown that can be a year-round sort of market maker space, like with kitchens that people can, you know, take classes in and things like that, to learn how to cook and grow produce year-round and things like that. It's like, I mean, it's in like every sector you see it. So, and I think that's what it takes. Like, it's got to move together. It can't just be like one trailblazer or in one sector or the other. Like, if it's all, the cool thing about being here now is that it's all pushing in the same direction together. And I think that what we see, especially in like the developments happening over the last few years, is the result of many years of like concerted effort to be doing that by multiple groups, individuals, organizations. So to me, there's examples of it everywhere, like in all sectors of life here.
Matthew Shepard, I feel like people think Wyoming Matthew Shepard.
Yeah.
Is it a place that is welcoming and tolerant of LGBTQ people, or is it changing, or is it take people who are leaders in the community?
I think it's sort of all of that. It's still something. I don't think it's well established necessarily, but I do think it's moving in the right direction. And for me, that was one of the biggest like reasons I didn't want to move back here. Mm-hmm. And that to me also is why sometimes live and let live is not good enough.
Yeah.
Right? Because when you've got something like that, that has like marked your reputation and colors people's view of you, then it's not really good enough to say like, we don't actually care. We'll probably leave you alone as long as you don't bother us. Right? It's like, well, that's not really proactive enough to really make people feel like, are you sure you're not going to bother me? Or are you like, you know, if it becomes inconvenient, like, are you going to be like, you know? So my experience here has been really good, and I think that is a place that the platform that I have here has been really important. And also my wife, she works here too, so we're definitely like known in the community. And I think that's what it takes, is people who are active in the community, who are like, and also like, this is another organization I support and this is why. And you know, we're out and open, so I think that's really important as well, to be like, yeah, and you know, you like us and you like our business and you like what we're doing for the community and we're contributing positively. So when we say things, we need this or we need this in our community, in order to make sure that we're doing what we can to create an environment that's going to be welcoming to, I mean, all people, hopefully, but specifically where I think we can influence is in the LGBTQ world, then like when we say those things, I think people listen a little bit, you know, a little bit more, because we are also involved in, we're not just beating the drum just for that issue, you know, we're beating the drum for the community and all aspects of the community, and then that gives us, you know, credibility when we say like, no, like we really need to do this, like we need to, we've got a non-discrimination resolution signed through the city council
like, Charlie about that,
a little while ago, and it's like, those things are important, like to me, like, you know, it's not, unfortunately, like not legally binding or anything like that, but it still sends a message and it's a step, you know, and it's like, people here I don't think understand the impact of Matthew Shepard in terms of what people think about us
nationally
and internationally. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's things like that, we have to make the statement, because if we don't make the statement, we haven't done anything to like give people any reason to believe that it's that's not normal or not the usual or that's not how it is here, because for all they know it is, and for all I know it is, right? Because we haven't, like, what action have we taken to prevent it, to, I mean, if we just take it as like a fluke, you're like, yeah, that will not happen ever again. It's like, I mean, that's not the appropriate way to respond to something of that magnitude, right? The appropriate way is to put in mechanisms to prevent something like that from happening again.
Okay, Luke, that was my interview with Amber over a delicious cocktail with the Wyoming distilled gin. So did that interview make you think about anything differently, inspire anything in you?
I think hearing Amber talk about moving away from your hometown and returning is really interesting as a queer person, because I don't know if other people feel similarly, but I felt a knee-jerk reaction to have to uproot myself from where I was from, and my hometown not necessarily having a negative experience, just sort of being a queer person, the idea of flocking to a place that's saturated with like-minded individuals was sort of at a big forefront of myself moving. So here Amber talking about that impulse too, but then returning and the idea of being able to move the needle a little further in a town like Casper was really interesting to me, because immediately it started pulling out a reaction in myself that was sort of like, you know, well, what could I be doing if I was back in the Northeast? Like, how could I be helping in the place that I'm from? And I think inadvertently, you know, like moving away and gaining experience does help. I think it sort of offers the idea that you can achieve, or, you know, any of these like fluffy, you know, ideas. You know, I was attracted to New York because we know there's an abundance of cool people doing an abundance of cool things. So what do you do if you take your experience from these places and go back and say like, well, here, I'm going to put this incredible distillery, I'm going to call it Backwoods Distillery, which is an awesome name, and it's going to be a gathering spot for people that maybe wouldn't have had that experience that I had of going somewhere else and meeting other people. And I'm going to create that here. The impulse to leave and being able to do it is an immense privilege. And, you know, like there are people that are not afforded that same luxury of being able to physically up and move from a space that's maybe traumatic, or a group of people that might be associated with trauma or, you know, development of becoming oneself. But I think it's really interesting to say, I'm going to come back and be something for everyone. You know, I think it would be really easy also to come back to a place like Casper that could, you know, you talk about it in the clip, is associated with something as tragic as the Matthew Shepard case. You know, it would be really easy to be like, well, I'm going to come back and only serve this one community, and it be offered for a safe space for like-minded people that we don't want to be affected in the same way. But actually to say like, you know what, the key is in that gray area of being a place for everyone and realizing that it's okay, come in, the water's fine. I really relate to. And I think that's a really hard thing that doesn't really necessarily exist in the polarizing time that we've just gone through and continue to go through. To say like, I'm going to be something for everyone is in a small place. Like that is really monumental, I think. And I think we need more of that across the board, you know.
I think what you're saying is, I've actually never thought about it before. It's like, it's not just creating space for a certain group of people or a safe space. It's by inviting everybody, that's when you create, and I think she said this somewhere, like she wants to create a community, and not just a community of a particular type of person, but a community of people where you build trust even when there are differences. And
yeah,
those community spaces are where you build relationships that you may not be able to build other places. Like it explains why Amber is now sitting on the city council of Casper.
I mean, how incredible is that? It's to take it one step further as well is a testament to who Amber is as well, because that kind of proactiveness, I don't think naturally comes to a lot of people. I think especially those that are striving to be leaders, it's a lot of responsibility. And I really admire that in someone like Amber who takes it that step further. You know, it's funny that you mentioned the community aspect, because I think about this from my hometown. You know, as much as coming out to my parents personally was wonderful in hindsight, you know, they were very accepting, and that's what we're sort of seeking in that moment, I guess. I have a lot of conversations with people about the difference between acceptance and understanding, and I think, you know, they are different. You know, I don't understand why my husband douses everything in ketchup. However, I let him keep ketchup in the fridge, and I'm not likening your taste of condiment to who you are as a person, but I sort of correlate that in a way of, I can't expect people or someone else to wholly understand a decision that I've made. However, I do think it's our job to accept another person for who they are, whoever they prove themselves to be or whoever they are, you know? And I think creating a space like a distillery, which is such a hub of community, it encourages that acceptance. And you know what? Everyone in that space is probably not going to understand everything that everyone's going on, and they're not expected to. And I think that's where we encourage growth and change. And like Amber says, moving the needle is by putting people into the same space that is safe, that encourages that community, I think is the way forward. And that difference is where I sort of fit related to like my personal stuff of just, I do think there is a big difference between acceptance and understanding. I don't know if you feel the same. I think we have to accept people for who they are, but we don't have to immediately understand wholly who are that person. That is a fully formed person, and you are a fully formed person. There isn't going to be direct correlation between every facet of your human being, but you have to take the other person at who they are.
Okay, well, I think the next interview kind of goes along with this because, you know, as Amber got into local Casper politics, she made reference to the non-discrimination resolution that was passed by Charlie Powell, the mayor of Casper at the time. And so this was a non-discrimination resolution to not discriminate against LGBTQ people in Casper. And it was, I think, a pretty hot button issue. And I should say before I dive into this interview, one of the most welcoming, wonderful places I visited. I mean, I went out to this bar and people were literally, I don't even know what kind of dancing it is. Like a lot of twirling. It's not line dancing. We're talking partner dancing. People have cowboy hats on, twirling. Like people welcomed me into their homes. People cooked me dinner. I went out to someone's ranch home and they let me feed their horse and ride their horse. Like this is a town of very wonderful people. And this interview with the mayor, he talks a little bit about what the discussion about the non-discrimination resolution sort of yielded. So
yeah,
he said it was very civil, but let's hear from Mr. Charlie Powell himself.
A big issue, not just for Casper, but for Wyoming. Jared Stack, who's runs the Casper Innovation Center, which is basically an incubation program for startups. And he's saying there's 1,000 open positions in Casper right now.
I ask everyone this. You know, I'm a grad student right now in the UK, and I don't have a place to live. So why should I move to Casper? What would I do? What are the jobs? Where would I live?
There are a lot of opportunities. And I mean, the Innovation Center being a good example, where people will just have an idea, but they don't have the wherewithal and they don't have the loan history to put it into practice. And so, like a lot of communities, we created this Innovation Center where basically they're given a place to work for very low cost, and then they have consultants there that help them understand what it means to run a business and how you put a business plan together, how you get get prototypes built if you're trying to build something, or if you're working on software, you know, consultants that can help with that. Take this idea and turn it into something. And then the idea with the Innovation Center is for it to get legs and then spin off into an actual business, mm-hmm. which has happened. So, you know, that's one way that people have come to the community and sort of gotten a foothold and made it a home. Yeah, it's a chicken and egg problem. We need you here, you know, to convince the businesses that would employ you to choose Casper. Mm-hmm. But we need them to choose Casper so there's a place for people like you to come and find a job. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's unlike other places.
And is there an issue besides economic development that you want to tackle during your time as mayor?
Yeah, you know, and I could be off base on this, but I mean, I do think we have had this image problem or challenge. One of the things we did almost a year ago, is we passed a non-discrimination resolution. Mm-hmm. And that was very controversial in our little town because this is a very conservative environment. But we were just talking about the Shepherd murder. Mm-hmm. That was 20 years ago. And, you know, it seems to me that has played a role in how people have viewed Wyoming. And we've even heard stories where people had an opportunity to move to Wyoming and they were told by their friends, and if they were gay, don't go there, you could get shot, killed. Yeah. You know, they hate gay people there. And it's not true.
Yeah.
But it's an image challenge that we have. And so I recently gave a little speech to our legislators. I don't know how it went across because we met with all of them. I said, you guys need to seriously consider a non-discrimination statute for the state of Wyoming. And it's not so much about inviting all the gay and lesbian people into Wyoming or Casper, although they're welcome. Everybody's welcome if they've got something to contribute. But it's about a message to an entire generation that thinks that having a problem with people because of their sexual orientation is goofy.
Mm-hmm.
And why would you want to be in a place where people think that way? And I think if they were to pass the statute, it would at least cause some people to take a second look and say, well, maybe I was wrong about that. Because
mm-hmm.
I've heard lots of people, I know a lot of gay and lesbian people in town here, and most of them will say, I came here, I wasn't really sure how this was going to go, but it's been great. People have been great. And so, not always, but I don't want to overemphasize the importance of that.
Right.
But I think we want people to see this place for what it really is. A great place to live where people are good to each other and respect each other and give each other room to be the way they want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I was really emotional, I think, listening to it. It was really weird. It like sort of brought out a really weird reaction in me. And more strikingly, in Charlie's conversation at the end, when he says he's going to the shepherd's house, is like triggered me. I was like a mess. I was like, they're now known at like state level, you know, and national level, you know, of the change they made because of this tragic incident, and continue to want to push the needle in their hometown based on that. And that's, yeah, my little brain can't wrap around that kind of activism. I think it's just incredible. I think it's very baffling.
Yeah, and it's funny because I did a production of Laramie Project in May, and I'd never seen it before. I didn't really know. I just, you know, the story and just the nuances of the actual story of it actually being kind of a beautiful community story. Like the community kind of comes together and there is a lot of love there, but what the rest of the world knows about that story is Wyoming hates gay people.
Yeah, and I think that's also the power of the like negative power of media and like where we're at now of taking things at face value and not really lifting up the cover and going, well, there can't, like, no person is just this one thing that I've decided I'm going to categorize them at, and no place is just this one thing that this tragedy has happened in. You know, you have, I'm a very much a glass half full guy anyway, and so I find it really hard to believe that it's that things are just one thing. I like to see, and it was really, I think that was part of the emotion of listening to these clips, is like, no, there are people that are still really wanting to make this a welcoming space and challenging our perceptions, which is, because people just won't, like, and you know, and we live in a time where you don't have to, you can move on and do something else, and you can fly somewhere else and move up and never talk about it again. And then the idea that there's people that are still actively trying to heal,
and I think you're exactly right, because then it becomes so easy to write people off, and it becomes easy for them to write you off. And when you write people off as wrong or not your cup of tea or not someone you ever want to see, it becomes really easy to dehumanize them on any side of an issue.
Yeah.
And we're living in this time that I think we dehumanize people when we don't agree with them. And it leads to violence. It leads to all sorts of awful things. And, you know, and I think part of a criticism that could, you know, come from, you know, trying to find the humanity in people that maybe I don't agree with, it's like, well, why do you have to do that? But it's also about someone has to start. Someone has to do it, and someone needs to take the time. The world is set up in a way right now that is going to make us tear each other apart, because we just digest the media. Yeah. We digest what Twitter's algorithms are telling us. And that's and we're just going to block people, write people off until it becomes a really ugly,
yeah,
ugly place to live.
Being an actor and it being award season, I sort of like hone in on a lot of the media that goes on right now. And there's always a conversation with actors that do particularly tricky, or they play people that are very easy to hate, that are complicated, that are layered. You know, we're very quick to be like, what was it like to play that? And the actor's response is always, those are the best parts to play. The best parts, and I can attest in the very little experience that I have in my career, of I love playing someone or stepping into the role or the shoes of someone that I don't understand, because it affords a challenge to try and find, yes, personal connection, you know, that Stanislavski method of bringing your own personal experience into someone else, but also sometimes you don't have an answer. Sometimes you aren't able to justify an action or an opinion. That's because you're not that person, and that's the challenge of a performance. But I think if we take away all the performance element of it, why don't we do that with other people? Like, I think the beauty in not being able to relate to someone is the key. Because if we were able to, and we were all skipping around the world, yeah, of course, I'm not encouraging conflict, and do I want there to be world peace? Absolutely. But I think if we listen to someone who has a different opinion or a different experience to yourself, and not try and cram your personal experience in as a comparison to, just listen to their experience. You might, with every fiber of your being, disagree. And that's okay. Like, that's okay. You just have to be aware that that exists and find the likeness or find a common denominator. And if not, then you probably don't have to be friends with that person. And that's okay. You don't have to be. We move on. It's not about penalizing or, like you said, blocking, which is a very easy action to do online. And, you know, of course, we then go down the road of like mental health. It is helpful to do that at times. However, I think finding connections with people sometimes rest in being unable to relate on some levels than others. It's just funny seeing like award season is always heralded of like the baddies are like so fun to play and so fun to watch. And then it's like, you know, you sit across someone at Thanksgiving who's like, well, I don't agree. And you're like, well, I'm never speaking to you again. You're off the Christmas list and you were not part of my family tree ever. And you're like, well, okay, let's unpack that for a second and just rewind and go like, okay, we disagree. How do we find a common ground?
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say about what you heard from Mr. Charlie Powell?
It's a great question to ask what you asked him, which is, what would I do? Where would I live? Which seems like a very simple question and that there should be a very straightforward answer. But ultimately, like what he was saying, it is a chicken and egg situation because he couldn't articulate what exactly you would do. But however, we need you here.
I mean, I'm not even joking. I thought about very seriously moving to Casper. I was like, this is exactly the type of, I don't think novelty is the right word. In what universe would I, having grown up in the Midwest, gone to theater school in Chicago, end up there? And I was just like, what a fascinating thing. I did opt not to do that, which would have been fascinating. I don't know how it would have worked out with the pandemic, not having any family nearby, but it's still on my radar. I'll say that.
I think also like what was breaking the fourth wall here, maybe of this podcast structure, but like listening to previous episodes, I could tell in these clips that you were making that decision. I could tell that there was something about the people that you spoke to that like piqued your curiosity in a different way, maybe than other states. I don't know if that assessment is, but it makes sense that you did seriously question moving there, because I really do think that they have their finger on the pulse of what I think it needs. Having not visited, I find it very hard. I have to have seen a place, I feel, to almost, yes, like imagine. I mean, I had visited New York before I moved there. You know, I didn't just blindly go based on Devil Wears Prada, which I probably still would have done. But the eclipse made me question, like, would I move somewhere else? And, you know, Gina and I talk about this often. I always feel like New York is a moment. It's not forever. And for some people it is. We've always felt like maybe there would be somewhere else. You know, again, I haven't seen enough of America to figure out where we would go. But it does make you question, like, well, what can I bring, you know, with this, with my experiences and who I am as a person to a place like us?
Yeah. People forget this was a journalistic foray into where should I live in the United States. So I went everywhere to figure it out. It's the longest episode of House Hunters in history.
HGTV should pick it up. We need less Property Brothers and more like, why should I live here?
Let's move on to the very last clip, and a fascinating one for me, because speaking to a man who is actually not the most recent Democratic governor, there was a Democratic governor in the late 2000s and early 2010s, but spoke to Mike Wallace, who was the governor of Wyoming in the 90s, and then became a ambassador to Ireland under Bill Clinton. So let's give this distinguished man a listen.
Okay, so we're talking about how in the West, it doesn't matter Democrat or Republican so much. It's more about how people line up on the issues. What do you think the main issues are to be a successful politician in Wyoming?
Well, the key issues, as we've alluded to, are public lands and mineral resources, and they're intertwined. A subset of that is, and probably almost equivalent to that issue, is wildlife and the environment. Ironically enough, the toughest issue, I think, is the balance between exploiting the natural resources and protecting the environment and the wildlife resources, because we're really proud in Wyoming of the outdoors, the wildlife resources, and yet it's the mineral resources that provide the economic benefit. Now, tourism is a big economy in Wyoming, but it doesn't hold a candle to oil, gas, and coal. And coal is declining now, as you would know. And so we're now into wind.
There's a lot of wind here, I've noticed.
There's a lot of wind, that's right. And it's a resource, but it's interesting because it was one of those, and it still is, an environmental resource where everybody says, well, this will help us get rid of oil and gas and so on. But in fact, I've always believed that the wind resource and the wind development does more harm to the landscape than oil and gas does. And we're now just starting to have that appreciated, that they take up a lot of land and they mess it up and get in the way of, as oil and gas does as well. You have to be careful where you're building because of the wildlife migrations and so on.
And I feel like there's a sense that people in Wyoming care a lot about their land, but they don't want the federal government deciding what's public land and what people can and can't touch. Is that true?
Generally. They love their land and they hate the federal government. But I think that's one of the challenges of the issues, is trying to balance that, because the federal government is truly a partner in most of what we do. We've got 50% of the surface is federal government, and I think it's 70% of the minerals or something are owned by the federal government. So nothing really happens without having to have collaboration with the federal government.
And just on top of, I think that there's a distrust of the federal government for sure, but there's a rare breed of Wyomingite who says, you know, just scrap the BLM, Bureau of Land Management. Mm-hmm.
Generally.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing for, I think, most business owners that work in the energy sector is when a new administration comes in, they love the Trump administration because it's just all the environmental regulations are just scrapped. But then you get, you know, somebody that's oriented towards more regulation, and then they put in all of these onerous rules that the business owners say, well, you know, this kind of migratory bird doesn't land here or whatever, but we still have to fill out an entire survey based on this obscure bird or whatever. And like that costs them thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
But there, as Sloan said, I think there's a general recognition that we may not want all the folks in Cheyenne developing the lands that the Fed, that there is some good that comes out of it.
Okay, Luke, heard from the governor. Did that inspire any thoughts, inspirations, epiphanies in you?
It was funny because these interviews felt like they almost zoomed out, like with each one, you know what I mean? Like it was sort of someone that was working on the ground of like creating community. And then you had someone that was sort of chaperoning that community. And then you had someone that was sort of overseeing that community. So it was really interesting that I thought he was talking about things on like a bigger scale. Like off the bat, he was talking about like natural resource exploitation or land exploitation, which obviously makes sense in a state like Wyoming that is predominantly, you know, sort of uninhabited. But it was interesting because, you know, coming from a mining town that I feel like it's its entire industry, you know, then you take that industry away and you see the repercussions of that. It was really interesting to hear and talk about something from like an almost like us plebeians do contribute to and talk about, but it's a very different issue than I feel like the other two. It was a very different issue than than Amber and Charlie you spoke about.
So yeah, it's really interesting because I'm reading this book called American Nations, A History of the 11 Rival Regional Cultures of North America.
Comedy fiction.
Yes, it's a rom-com. Light read. Pick it up. You'll love it. You like Devil Wears Prada? You will love this. But basically, every single culture in America has a certain political understanding based on how that region was formed. And, you know, obviously starting in the East Coast, colonization, southern plantation states, northern industrial states. But when he talks about Western states, he says that mistrust of the government comes from, during the founding of these states, these big corporations would come and exploit workers, send them to mines, and instead of getting people in government that regulated and protected them, they would get people in government who were in the pockets of, or even board members of, these big corporations. So the distrust in government comes from, you don't know what you're doing. All these laws that you're passing aren't to protect me. They're to line your pockets, which I found so interesting because when I was in Wyoming, I drove past this giant barn that had "Freedom Ends Where Regulation Begins" painted on it. And all of a sudden, after reading this book, I saw that in a completely different light. If you had been taken advantage of by your state government for decades and decades and decades, that doesn't just suddenly go away. You don't suddenly just shift gears and go, oh yeah, government, they're on my side. They're going to do what's right by me. And I just thought that was a really interesting piece of the puzzle that we don't often talk about, is like, where did people's regional, cultural, political views start? And where did it evolve to get there? And it's still evolving based on these things. So it was just something I was thinking about with what you brought up about natural resources and the government protecting it.
I feel like this conversation almost is like lifting up a different, like an abundance of different lids. Like, you, in the pride of my hometown's mining culture, there is that, you know, there's that also of like butting up against regulations. Is there enough? Is there too little? You know, the danger of the physical doing of this job. It's sort of like a whole different kettle of fish when it comes to that kind of governance, because it's something that I don't know enough about, but also it does make you go, well, what is the root of a belief, like a sort of brazen shoulder against someone that maybe is trying to help? It's a big thing to paint on the side of your barn. When I was in Scranton, I did sort of like have a sharp intake of breath when I first saw like my first American red barn. You know exactly what kind of red I'm talking about.
Oh yeah.
But I was like, and I was like, oh, that's like an American image. Maybe not with "Freedom Ends Where Regulations Begin." The color is called barn red. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
I don't know how they all coordinated that they were all going to be barn red. If there was just like a big sale one year, or like, I don't know how all the farmers decided that like this is the color that barns are.
I believe it was the Great Lowe's sale of 1843 that...
Is there anything else you want to discuss about mining towns, about New York, about Wyoming?
Maybe it's my natural curiosity of like, why is Ryan picked this state? Like, why this state? And I do think the epiphany moment for both of us was sort of the discussion of like finding a likeness that's maybe rooted in like a difference. I really didn't think that I had anything in common, or like I said, I hadn't ever articulated the word Wyoming, let alone discussion of the state. But then you sort of lift up the lid of it and you go like, oh, well, that ties into my hometown, or I feel similarly to Amber, and I wonder what I could do for my hometown, and would a brewery in my hometown have the same effect? And I think that's sort of the magic of this podcast, is like, you actually, in not having an answer, have an answer.
This was such a journey for me, and I learned so much about myself, and obviously it changed my life in a lot of ways. I want to pair people with the states that I think will bring them on the greatest journey for them as well, so they can, you know, get a taste of it. This was an excellent pairing, like a good wine and a fine red barn. But you gave me everything I wanted. Well, Luke, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on. The perfect pairing, the perfect states, the perfect friend. Look forward to seeing you real soon.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 50 States of Mind. The best way you can help is to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, or just share with your friends. We're really committed to telling the stories across America. So if you know someone who would be good on the podcast, send an email. 50statesofmindusa@gmail.com. or find us on Instagram at 50 States of Mind. Thanks for listening.